Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren on a beautiful sunny day in Park City. And Doug Wells is off today, and in his place we have his distant cousin, actually not related at all, John Wells, joining us. Thanks for coming in, John.
Pleasure to be here, Larry.
Well, we should have an interesting show. Last one of the year, and hope you all had a Merry Christmas and looking forward to a new year. And if you're getting up there in years, you may be looking toward retirement or are already in retirement. And our first guest is Gary Williams, and he's the author of The Art of Retirement. And the subtitle of the book is Create a Masterpiece, The Michelangelo Approach to Financial Planning. So we'll learn all about how to plan for your retirement, whether you're 20 or 64 or so. And then we'll mix it up in the back half of the show with a couple of local guests.
Our second guest this morning will be Melissa Garland, owner of Tadasana Yoga Studio. She began practicing Tadasana Yoga Studio at the Tadasana Yoga Studio in Jeremy Ranch, which is the longest running hot yoga studio in Park City. In August of this year, she purchased the studio from founder Gwen Fellen. She's also going to be expanding that facility, and we'll have an interesting conversation.
Do you practice yoga and meditation and all that?
A little bit. Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, this is the hot yoga is a new one on me, although it's been around. So Melissa will fill us in on that.
And then Meryl DeMond, who is has a private chef business here in Park City since 2006. And she now is expanding her private chef business model to include pickup and delivery service, much needed in Park City. These three guests plus today's weather when we return. You're listening to Mountain Money, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have Gary Williams on the line. Are you there, Gary?
I'm here.
Very fine. Welcome to sunny and chilly Park City, Utah, and you're calling in from Columbia, Maryland, where you are a certified financial planner and president of Williams Asset Management. And your book is called The Art of Retirement, The Michelangelo Approach to Financial Planning, and you have Michelangelo statues decorating the front cover of the book. Clue us into what Michelangelo has to do with financial planning in the 21st century.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you very, very much for having me, Larry. I appreciate the opportunity. And Michelangelo was obviously one of the greatest artists of all time. He was a painter, he was a sculptor, a poet, but he didn't begin his third career in architecture until he was 71 years old. And to put this in perspective, he lived until age 88, when the life expectancy at the time was only 35. So he was following his passion, and that passion helped him live a long and fulfilling life. And what I try to talk about in The Art of Retirement, which is really a comprehensive guide to anybody thinking about retirement planning, and as you led into it, it could be read by somebody in their 20s or somebody in their 60s, they're still going to get something out of it. What I tried to do is use Michelangelo's life and his artwork as a metaphor to compare your life to a masterpiece. What can you do to make the most out of life, whether it's financially or spiritually or physically, just exhausting life?
Right, and you combine both practical experience with a more philosophical approach. The front half of the book is talks a lot about values and how to be happy in retirement. The second half is the more practical side, how you build a portfolio that works for you. What's different about your book from other retirement books? I would imagine it's the stuff in the first half.
I would agree with you. You know, as you read as many listeners have probably read retirement books, they can get quite dry. You can talk all you want about money, but money isn't the only part of retirement. Sure, it has a lot to do with it. You can't do the things that you want to do in retirement without it, for the most part. But it's not everything. There's a lot more to it. And in the first part of the book, I talk about everything from perspective, enjoying what you have and not worrying about what you don't have. I talk about, I use an example of my good friend O.J. Bergance, who used to play for the Baltimore Ravens and currently has ALS. And he lives life to the fullest, regardless of his circumstances, which are the fact that he can't do anything. He's wheelchair-bound except for the ability to move his eyes. But he lives life to the fullest. He goes to work every day. He vacations. It's pretty amazing. So I try to help the reader understand that, you know, you may face illness in retirement. You may face a setback in the stock market. You may not have been able to save as much as you wanted to, but you can still make retirement the most you can and enjoy it. I talk about things like an ethical will, where it's not about necessarily leaving all of your assets to your heirs, but leaving your values and your memories so that your legacy lasts on beyond our short life here on Earth. I also help people avoid the pitfalls that could come in today's information overload society. As you know, we are bombarded with information from the internet to 24/7 news of every opinion that you imagine. Some experts are telling us to buy gold. Some are telling us to sell gold. Some are saying the stock market's going to go up next year. The other people are saying the stock market's going to go down. Investors, the average mom and pops, don't necessarily know what to do with all of this information. And just trying to pull it all together so that you, as you do enter the second part of the book, you can really appreciate what money means to you and how to make the most of it. I talk about some pretty unique ways to invest your money in the second part of the book.
And Gary, I appreciate what you said about financial entertainers, you know, the Jim Cramers and the Sue Ormans of the world. And you have a quotation in your book from Warren Buffett that the only value of a stock forecaster is to make fortune tellers look good.
And, that's right. I love that line. He has some great one-liners.
Yeah, he certainly does. Gary, tell us about the role of temperament in investing.
Great question. So a lot of people out there with the amount of information that is available are trying to, more and more people are trying to do financial planning on their own. And in my opinion, to be able to do this successfully, you have to have three things: time, training, but most importantly, temperament. You need to be able to look at your situation and make objective, unemotional financial decisions. And it's very easy for somebody, especially when the markets are going up, to be able to say that they can do that. But it's tested when the markets are going down. Can you really hold on tight when the stock market is plummeting? And it's very easy to forget what you felt like back in 2008 after we've had such a great run-up in the market. But not only can you hold on tight, can you buy more when things look the ugliest?
So people have trouble resisting the temptation to continually buy and sell. It's more difficult for them to, you know, execute a buy and hold strategy. They feel that activity versus inactivity is the way to go.
Absolutely. I think that the it's very easy to sell, to buy. But it's harder to know when to sell. And when the markets are going up, that's when you have to look at your portfolio and say, you know, you're not going to sell everything at one time. You're not going to say, oh, the market's looking, you know, the market's up 20, 30%. Next year's not going to be as good. I'm going to sell my stocks. You're not, you know, a smart investor's not going to do that. They may sell at the margin, but they need to be able to buy things that haven't done as well. And the problem investors tend to make, and there's many of them, I talk about this in the first part of my book, is behavioral finance, understanding how your brain reacts to certain emotions as it relates to financial matters.
And what you say is the mind is prone to overconfidence, maybe thinking things will always be better and that stock is always going to rise and that sort of thing.
That's right. Once you see a stock go up and the herd, the average investor, starts flocking to it, it feels easier. It feels more comfortable to know other people are doing it. If everybody's doing it, it must be a good thing. Think about the tech bubble for a moment. Everybody was doing it, so it must be good. And that's what you see too much of. It's a good test when I hear from clients and people that I talk to on the street of starting to raise their risk tolerance. That starts to tell me that the markets are getting frothy. When they start to get that confidence level of, I want to invest more in stocks, which is chasing performance is one of the worst things and most common mistakes that you can do, where you give up that tried and true diversified portfolio, which doesn't look that great today compared to the stock market, and you sell off your investments, i.e. bonds, that haven't done as well, to buy stocks that have done well, only to see that party starting to maybe end. And you won't know when that party ended until it's over. Hindsight is 20/20.
Gary, let's talk about long-term investing. For so many years, financial advisors have pulled out these historical 50-year charts showing that a traditional asset allocation or diversification model, depending upon your risk appetite, is the way to go. These are the models that would work. And why not? Because they did work. But these old rules are really under fire. Can we talk about that?
Sure. I think that there is a lot to be learned from history. We know it doesn't repeat itself, but asset allocation, diversification, I still believe in wholeheartedly. In order to minimize risk, maximize return, it is vital for the average investor. Now, some investors don't care about risk, which is why you would allocate your money and diversify your money to minimize risk. But if you had extremely high risk tolerance and you could withstand 20-30% drops, why not put it all in small cap stocks, which have done the best over a very long period of time, the past 50 years, let's say. Most investors can't stomach that, so they diversify their assets. But as you said, times are changing. Some of those rules may be a little bit outdated. An investor needs to be flexible to understand what new products are out there, what new strategies may be out there. For example, bonds have been a great diversifier over the past 30 years. In general, over the past 30 years, interest rates have decreased. Of course, 1994, 1999, they were bad years for bonds so far this year. In general, not a great year for bonds. Will that trend continue? And, if you believe the experts that interest rates are going to continue to rise, bonds may not be the type of diversifier that you want to have in your portfolio.
So if people are thinking about that, and a lot of people do believe that interest rates will go up, and then they start thinking about, well, let's think about stock a little bit. Traditional asset allocations have more risk today than they've had in the past. And you bring out a fascinating point in your book about correlations and how they're increasing. More investments are moving in tandem with the S&P 500, which makes diversification more difficult. Can you talk about correlations?
Absolutely. So correlation is the core of diversification. Correlation ranges between, hopefully I'm not going to bore anybody out there, I'll try to keep it simple here, but it ranges between a positive one and a negative one. And if something has a positive one correlation, they're going up together. If something has a negative correlation, they're going in opposite directions. What we're trying to find in a diversified portfolio is non-correlation. The sweet spot would be between positive 0.25 and negative 0.25 correlation. And when you get the right mix of equities and other instruments in the portfolio that have this non-correlation, you're hopefully going to be able to minimize risk and maximize your returns based on the level of risk that you're willing to take, which is the first step of the process, figuring out your capacity for risk. So, like you said, finding non-correlating investments is becoming elusive. And that has led me in my practice into using alternative investments to find that non-correlating component.
So what's an alternative investment look like?
An alternative investment is everything, and there's different definitions, but in my definition, it's everything except for long-only stocks and bonds. So when I say long-only, I mean stocks and bonds that you're hoping go up. For example, shorting stocks and bonds. In that case, you're hoping they go down. It could be managed futures investments. It could be private equity. It could be a host of other things. But commodities, real estate, anything besides long-only stocks and bonds would fall into that alternative space.
Okay. Well, let's move away from the specifics of retirement and investing for retirement and talk more about the benefits mentally to planning your retirement. One thing you say that struck me as absolutely right on is you should retire to something, not from something. You shouldn't be going, I can't wait to get out of this job. You should be thinking more, I can't wait to jump into X.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the traditional thought of retirement is you get into some time around your 60s and you retire. But that's that's what society tells you. What you should really look for is what helps you jump out of bed in the morning. What are you passionate about? If you're passionate about work, don't let anybody tell you it's time for you to retire. Keep doing what you're doing. Because if you stop working and that was your passion, you're not going to have a great retirement. You could have all the money in the world, but if you don't have something to do with that money and with your life to make it rewarding, it's not going to be fulfilling. You know, work itself gives a lot of people a sense of pride, respect, a sense of accomplishment, and you may need to find things to replace those ideals in your life. But it could be volunteering, it could be working part-time, it could be taking the skills that you used while you were working and translate them into something that is similar.
Gary, I'm curious. When people hit the age of 65, what percentage continue in their careers? What percentage try something new? What percentage don't work at all?
It's a good question. I don't know those percentages off the top of my head. I've noticed that more and more people are postponing retirement. I think that's partially a function of the economy and trying to still build the portfolio up and recoup the losses, but I can't tell you. I know those percentages off the top of my mind.
Okay. All right. Can you talk about volatility? The last 10 years have been more volatile than the last 50 years combined.
Yeah, if you look, one of the charts that I have in the book talks to that point, and the research that I did was I looked at the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. And in each of those decades, the number of times the S&P 500 went up or down by more than 3% was in the 20s. But once we got to the last decade, that number jumped up to over 100. And so far this decade, through the first few years, the number is already up to over 20. So I think there's a good possibility that trend of volatility will continue. And if it does, investors just need to be aware of it. They need to be prepared emotionally for those big ups and downs. When you look back at the last downturn, the S&P 500 lost 57%. The technology bust, it lost about 47%. So will that trend continue? I don't know. But if it does, investors need to be prepared to buckle in.
Well, that's a pretty it's quite a graphic when you think about the last 10 years have been more volatile than the last 50 combined. I mean, something is certainly afoot. And I'm curious, hedge funds seem to like volatility when you look at hedge fund returns. Is that true?
I don't necessarily know if they like volatility. Some do, some don't. Some like trends. But a hedge fund does have the flexibility by using maybe leverage or shorting that it can take advantage of volatility. I don't necessarily know if it looks for it.
Okay. Can you tell us more about the ethical will? I think it's also called a family love letter.
Mm-hmm. So part of the research in the book led me to discovering an ethical will and really figuring out why it makes sense. And part of the research was an interview with baby boomers and their parents, and the bottom line was that while the baby boomers are knowing that they're going to get inheritance, they wanted to find out more about what their parents' lives were about, what their values are, and making sure that those values and memories and accomplishments can transfer on to future generations. And I'm not talking about creating a shrine here, but something as simple as a letter that's not legally binding. It doesn't take the place of your will. But while a will is going to talk about how to disperse your financial assets, an ethical will, as you said, is like a I love you letter. It's asking for forgiveness maybe from a regrettable action. Or telling you know your grandkids or great grandkids or great great grandkids what you did for a living, why it was rewarding for you, what you accomplished in life, maybe talking about your charitable ideals and philanthropy and why you gave to certain organizations. So it's just a way to make sure you are not forgotten when you leave this world. Unfortunately, I lost my mom when I was 8 years old. I lost my dad when he was in his 60s. And I didn't get a real good chance to find some of these things out. I wish I did.
Well, that's that, of course, is the most valuable thing of all, rather than cash, than you can leave. Your children is your approach to life, and hopefully you've made it a good one. And we'll end on that note. Gary Williams, I want to thank you for checking in with us. The book is The Art of Retirement, Create a Masterpiece, The Michelangelo Approach to Financial Planning. Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Thank you very much for having me. You can find out more about the book on theartofretirement.org. I appreciate you having me, and Happy New Year's.
Okay, same to you. And as you heard Curtis Ray say this morning, sadly, there is a chance of snow in the forecast, but it looks like it's brushing by to the north of us, maybe around Evanston and the Star Valley in Wyoming and the border country of Utah and Idaho. That chance of snow is down to about a 20% chance tomorrow and tomorrow night. So today we're heading for a high of 36 degrees under partly sunny skies. I'd say mostly sunny skies looking out our weather window here. So we will be back with Melissa Garland, owner of Tadasana Yoga Studio, next. And she can, among other things, tell us how to pronounce that word, JW. So we'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Park City Realty Group is proud to support KPCW. Park City Realty Group has provided real estate services to buyers and sellers since 2005. Our team shares local knowledge and insight with clients who value the Park City lifestyle. Knowledge plus hard work equals success. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
And we are back to Mountain Money. I'm John Wells. I'm here with my co-host, Larry Warren. I'm pinch hitting for Doug Wells this morning, and I'm glad to be here, Larry. It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And Doug is out. He's a part-time. He wears many hats. One of them is a ski instructor, and this is a day he was fully booked and knew he was about 6 months ago. So he told us long ago that he'd be out teaching other people what we know so well here.
Before we introduce our next guest, according to Yoga in America, a study released by Yoga Journal, there are 20.4 million Americans practicing yoga today. It's a 30% increase since the previous study, which was in 2008. And it appears that Parkites are not only following the trend, but they're pushing it a little bit. According to our next guest, Melissa Garland, Tadasana yoga has grown by over 50% in that same period, and now she's going to be building a new studio. And we want to welcome you, Melissa, to Mountain Money. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, first of all, tell us how to pronounce Tadasana.
Oh, you got it.
That time we got it. Okay, What is it? What is hot yoga as opposed to yoga?
Good question. Well, so Tadasana is, just to give you a little clarity there, asana is a word you may have heard if you've ever come anywhere near yoga, and asana means pose, or its original Sanskrit translation means seat. So Tadasana is the name of the studio and the correct pronunciation, and it means mountain pose. It's a particular pose that we do here that you would do in the course of a class, but it's also kind of a great name for the studio considering where we live. So, but what we do is, as you've asked, is hot yoga. But hot yoga is something that's grown over the last 20 years, maybe, that originated really with a gentleman by the name of Bikram Chowdhury, who created a version of yoga that was done in a room that was 105 degrees, all with the intention of getting you to really get loose and open up. The muscles loosen faster in the hot room. But what we do is a version of that, so the more recent, modern, if you will, outcomes of that are a slightly cooler room, maybe 90 to 95 degrees, but still warm enough that you feel like you can really start to move quickly, that your muscles start to warm up. And we do a version of yoga that we call power vinyasa, where we're moving smoothly through all of the asanas or postures so that you really get a pretty good workout in the process.
Melissa, I was originally drawn to yoga because I wanted to get some additional flexibility and some strength. And what became abundantly clear from the very first class was that my balance was really off. It had really deteriorated over the years. And after about 6 months, I mean, it was just right back where, you know, where it should be. Yoga is very good for balance, isn't it?
Oh, it's tremendous for balance. And that's an excellent point, because people often fail to or don't recognize, rather, that how important a role balance plays in your sort of everyday activities, whether you're skiing, hiking, biking. You know, balance is something that we lose if we don't keep the brain trained. And, you know, like anything, you have to do it to make it work. So in yoga, we do a lot of balancing postures. And as you say, as you experienced, if you work at it, you really will see an improvement in your balance, in addition to all these other things like strength and stretch training.
So is yoga a substitute for going to the gym, lifting weights, doing jumping jacks, whatever it is one does? Does yoga strengthen the body in other ways? Or where does yoga fit into a fitness routine?
It's an excellent question. I personally believe that yoga is just one of many options. So doing the strength training, doing the other kinds of aerobic activity is very important. And what yoga really does is provide you with several key things. It, certainly flexibility, but which is also essential. But also we do a lot of using your own body's weight to strengthen the muscles, as well as what you might call a kind of mind training, right? So there's a lot of focus that's required of you in a yoga class. And if you spend a lot of time at doing yoga, you'll find that your brain is trained a little better in how to take on the next challenge or deal with challenging things in your life or, you know, just stay in the room, right? Stay focused on everything from actually physical practice to other things in your life. So yoga serves a lot of benefits, physical and mental, I've found.
Melissa, I don't have a lot of discipline to work out on my own, so I found these various classes, boot camp, core, yoga, maybe a cardio class to be, you know, really helpful because, you know, the instructor's there and they push you pretty hard and it's a lot easier to work out for me anyway. And one of the things that I observed is that these non-yoga classes have a tremendous amount of yoga in them. I was looking at it this morning and I counted 10 yoga poses that we do regularly just in a boot camp class, and not just at the end for stretching, but throughout the entire class. So it's found its way into non-yoga disciplines.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? I mean, so yoga is, there are many books written on the subject and its history and its origin. And, you know, a lot of us like to believe that yoga, at least the physical practice that we do every day, originates from some 2,500-year-old, you know, sort of thing. And the fact of the matter is that the physical practice that we do today really grew in the last 150 years or so. But the origins of the idea of yoga were all about trying to help you prepare your body for meditation. So there's a lot of sort of, if you will, ancient history, right, in the basics of yoga. But the physical practice has really grown in a more modern time. In doing so, the way it works and its unique nature is one of, again, sort of moving you. It's about connecting breath with movement and connecting mind with body. And so I think that union, which is what yoga means union or yoking, connecting things. I think that connection between mind and body is something that all athletic practices have found very valuable. And I think that's why you see it in so many other things that you do, like you say, in a CrossFit class. So it's really, it's only increasing in its acceptance and popularity.
Well, let's talk a little bit, Melissa, about the business side of this. I've known you for several years. You've had a couple of jobs. The last one was a tech job in the Valley, and now you jump into something completely different than tech, which is running a yoga studio. What got you into this career change?
It's a good question. I think that the underlying motivation was that old saying that you always hear, you know, do what you love and the rest will follow. And I've been practicing yoga for 12 years. It was kind of an offshoot for me of years of, as a kid, of doing ballet and always really enjoying that kind of a physical practice. And so yoga came to me as something that I just fell in love with it. I've always loved it. And so that combined, you know, the other side of my life has been business as you mentioned, tech marketing primarily. And so when I met with the previous owner of Tadasana, who was looking to move on to the next thing in her life, and she said, you know, would you be interested? And I thought, I am a marketing person who she built this business on, frankly, no marketing, purely word of mouth. And a lot of her hard work and her own sweat equity went into building it to what it is. And I thought, gosh, with a little bit of marketing effort and business experience that I have, and knowing how it's just growing in popularity both in Park City and elsewhere, I thought I probably had the love and the skills to help take it to the next level.
So have you moved, you've moved locations, and so you've got rent overhead. If you do this at 90 degrees, you have a substantial utility bill, I presume. Does this look to you to be relatively untapped if it's only grown by word of mouth, and now you can apply marketing to it and fill those classes?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we are moving, so the build out of the new studio is underway right now. We expect to move at the end of January. We're currently located we're in Jeremy Ranch behind the Phillips 66 gas station there. And we're going to be moving across the highway into the Quarry Village area. But the build-out's not yet done. And the key to the success with this, as you can imagine, you mentioned the heat and the electric bill. The key is creating a tight insulation in that box that's the studio, right? So then we just run as many classes as you know, people want. And we've grown from, well, we're now at 29 classes a week, which is up about, I think I added 5 new classes in the last 3 months, and they're filling up without much problem. There's just seems to be a really high demand for it, and I just hope that if we can let everybody know, you know, there are several other great yoga studios in Park City, and yoga, I think it's sort of a rising tide lifts all boats opportunity. And I think that we offer something fairly unique in terms of heat and in terms of sort of the workout with the traditional sort of spiritual side of what yoga can be. So you can get a little bit of both, Tadasana, and I think that's just a really it's really in high demand.
And you're running a promotion. You're running a promotion. For current and prospective customers?
That's right. So, you know, we're going to, we haven't raised prices in years. And so that and the move to the new studio is going to mean that it's time to adjust our pricing a little. So I'm encouraging anyone who has been thinking of trying yoga that they should get in. They got exactly 2 days, today and tomorrow. To get in, and if they've never purchased a pass with us, or at least if you didn't purchase one in 2013, you should do that. Even like a 5-class pass would get you 2013 pricing all of next year. And then everyone gets a chance to try. And our passes never expire, so you can use it as long as you want to.
Okay. Is this mostly a female activity? Are guys going to What?
Excellent question. I think that's just a great question because just the other day,
I went to a Zumba class once, and the only other guy was Randy Barton. We both got conned into Zumba, and it was like the male-female ratio was the two of us with about 40 women.
That sounds pretty good.
Well, yeah, it's well, except that exactly. We're both married. Other than that, a pretty good ratio.
That's right. There are always more than one way to look at that opportunity there, Larry. But it is fascinating to see how much men are drawn to the kind of yoga, especially that we're doing, I think, because I was in 2 classes in the past week where we had greater than 50% men in the room, more men than women in the room. So So, you know, it's just growing. I think, you know, one of the classes I did the other day, the teacher spent a lot of time doing what you would call a push-up and what we would call chaturanga, which is a low plank pose. And you do 10 of those in a yoga class, you walk out feeling like, you know, that was a pretty good workout, regardless of your gender, you know? So I joke, and it's kind of like Park City. We say you come for the winter and you stay for the summer. You know, with yoga, you come for the physical, the stretching or the physical practice, and then you stay because over time you realize it's brain training. It's really changing your life in a lot of ways. So
we are speaking this morning.
Worth a try if you've never done it. Sorry.
Oh, no. We're speaking this morning with Melissa Garland, who has started or has taken over the Tadasana Yoga Studio with a new facility being built in Jeremy Ranch. Melissa, we want to thank you for joining us this morning and wish you, of course, the very best of luck in your business.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Mountain Money, and when we return, we will be talking about takeout food, gourmet takeout food. I'm looking forward to that, Larry.
And we'll be back with that after this.
Just because it's white outside doesn't mean you can't stay green.
Listen to This Green Earth every Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Discussing environmental issues from methane gas to moose habitat.
Air quality to fire ecology.
And bark beetles to eating bugs.
That's This Green Earth, brought to you by Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.
Republic Services.
Habitat for Humanity's Restore.
And Rocky Mountain Power.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Do you know that members of the Park City Chamber Bureau have access to a wide array of benefits that give them an edge in the local marketplace? We offer members-only insurance and discount programs, business-to-business networking opportunities, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
And good morning. Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm John Wells here with Larry Warren. Our third guest this morning is Merrill Vandemerva. I screwed that up, didn't I?
No, that was perfect.
Okay, great.
Blow right by it.
Yeah.
And no one but the guest will notice.
Oh, I know it. Boy. And she's been a very successful private chef here in Park City since 2006. And she has now begun a business to include pickup and delivery service of her fine food. So welcome to Mountain Money, Merrill.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So tell us what you're doing.
Well, it's been 2 years of planning and a lot of demand from my local clients that I've developed over the years to have a pickup and drop-off service. So we've designed this awesome concept, and we're excited to have launched it now with my new commercial kitchen.
And she includes delivery. She's delivered us some lovely breakfast quiche here. What does it have in it? I see red peppers, ham.
Those are peppadews, okay. Which is an actual South African sweet chili with Italian sausage and arugula. So that's just one of our breakfast items that we have part of the delivery service that we're having.
I'm a bachelor, and I have all this, you know.
You want her phone number before we leave.
I've got great intentions for, you know, cooking every night, and I do pretty well. But I tell you, this would really come in handy. Mm-hmm.
Well, Gourmet on the Go was designed. I wanted to, first of all, hit a price point that we could reach a larger audience, because primarily my business model has always been private chefing, which is hitting a certain upper market. The four-day delivery is based on four different cuisines, because I've been traveling, you know, 13 years working on the super yachts and have had this incredible background of training and classically French trained, but then learned to cook all these different kinds of cuisines around the world. And so when coming up with the concept of Gourmet on the Go, trying to figure out what is going to be four menus that could hit a local target market that's kid-friendly, that we could execute consistently throughout the entire season and have it as a price point that both locals can afford and that middle market, we came up with Southwest cuisine, a Pan-Asian, Rocky Mountain, and a Mediterranean. So this is the 4 days of the week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, Fridays and Saturdays. And we have a flat fee of $10, or if you're really high up in the upper Deer Valley and so forth, it's $15 set.
That's delivery the delivery fee. Uh-huh. Okay.
And the prices for the menu are a la carte. So we have every menu has a set formula where it's a soup, a salad, two meats, three sides, including a starch, and a dessert. And so you can order all of it or some of it, part of it, for two people or for 20 people. The whole idea is that families come to Park City, they're tired, they want to experience Main Street, but they just don't want to do that every single night. And so this is giving Park City a new eating option with that's designed to actually reheat. So it's fresh. We make it daily. It's delivered between 3 and 5 in the afternoon. And it's, you know, globally inspired healthy food is how I like to describe it.
So do you have a commercial kitchen somewhere where this is – you and your elves are
yep.
Running around?
Absolutely. We are super excited to have finally found a kitchen. We are located out in Silver Creek. So we're 40 and 80 splits. It's behind the old Sinclair gas station.
Right.
So we are very, very fortunate. It's considered huge by the health department compared to kitchens on Main Street. There's pretty much nothing in there that we can't do. I have a 12-foot walk-in. We have a great little area in the front of the kitchen where you can come in and pick up your food. So I have four different, you know, business models. The original private chefing, and then we have these custom catering and private chefing that I'm really excited to be able to provide a larger audience of homeowners, people that live here that may get bored of the Gourmet on the Go delivery line. So they can actually, with 48 hours notice, call us and order anything that they would like, absolutely anything. And we can either deliver it or they can come and pick it up.
Well, Larry and I are not trained critics, but we do love food, don't we?
Indeed.
I'm thinking this quiche is pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
This would be the Southwestern?
This is actually my South African one because of the Pepperdews. So we have 5 assorted quiches, and then we have also a French toast bread pudding and, you know, fruit bowl and a yogurt parfait and some fresh veggie juices. So that's something
that if you Jenny order. Craig.
Well, I call it the skier's breakfast, but they're sweet, they're savory, it's kid-friendly, and it's something that if you order the Gourmet on the Go delivery line at night, why not just, you know, throw in a couple quiches or something to make your life easy the next morning?
So are you a one woman operation or
not anymore? Larry.
It sounds like yes, you'd need to run 4 different businesses out of one commercial kitchen.
It's certainly going to make the overall experience for all my chefs easier, because now we actually have a central point where we could have all our food and our deliveries and everything. The private chef business is just booming. We have 5 or 6 dinners on New Year's Eve. We at any point in time we're running 3 to 4 homes. So we separate ourselves because we create experiences for our families. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner with a private chef in home. So this season I have 8 chefs, about 18 to 20 servers, back of house, full back of house, full-time assistant. It's crazy. Like it's up to 30 people in my team over the winter season. And the kitchen is now going to be able to kind of give us that year-round business rather than the roller coaster of just craziness in the wintertime. So I'm excited about the locals menu and then the pickup daily menu, which is designed for people that know about us, word of mouth. You can stop by with no notice. You don't need 48 hours notice for that. So there's a you know, soup of the day, chili of the day, salad of the day. We've always got our short ribs on hand, which are incredible, our braised short ribs, and you know, organic chicken options, so quinoa salad. So they are, you know, the tourist market as well as the locals, because I really, really want to be able to have that.
How option. Is it priced for locals?
It is, absolutely.
Is this isn't just a Upper Deer Valley kind
nope.
of cuisine?
Not at all. The prices, our margins are extremely small because I've designed it to be volume. And I want to get the local community behind us because there's such a need to have healthy food. So I grill everything and it's giving the locals that option. So everything's priced accordingly. It's more than a supermarket, but it's less than restaurants for sure.
So for our listeners who would like to take a look at a website, can you give us a website where they can go and get menu selections?
Absolutely.
Or get a feel for pricing?
And so my website is www.dumondluxuryservices.com. So D-U-M-O-N-D-E luxuryservices.com. There's a tab on there that will send you to Gourmet on the Go. That's going to have, you know, have the entire menu with the pricing on that. On that menu, so that you can have all that information there.
So you've been you were on private yachts for a while, mm-hmm. which sounds very exotic. although you weren't stuck in the galley all the time, but that was your function. And now your many options for dining in Park City, the private dinners and the takeout and all the rest. You must have a passion for good food.
I love food, and it's you got to go with what you love, and I've loved food from an early start. It's what I've known. I've always wanted to do this, but doing it from a global perspective and being able to kind of incorporate healthy options as well is really down to my core as well. But that global influence is still in my core, which is why I'm also super excited about another project working with the IRC International Refugee Community as well. So that's, a whole, Spice Kitchen Incubator.
Yeah. What is the Spice Kitchen Incubator?
So the Spice Kitchen Incubator is it's a nonprofit. It's in Salt Lake. It's the same group of girls that started the New Roots program, which is all about supporting farm-to-table ingredients. So what I'm doing is working with these refugee girls on the food side of it to help train them. These women, to be accepted into the program, have to be extremely passionate about food and have an entrepreneurial spirit and want to be in the food business of some kind. So whether that be a food truck or a catering or just simply sell product at the farmer's market. It's giving them, understanding of business and helping them to do, to be successful, and giving them all the tools and the knowledge and on the business side of it as well as on the culinary side of it. So I'm excited about my kitchen because as we expand and settle in, I'm going to be able to provide them a space to actually cook once they graduate.
Well, Larry, it's too bad that Meryl doesn't have any enthusiasm. If she ever comes out of her shell, you know.
We're going to invite her back to be on the Noon News so she can
Absolutely. Bring
lunch to us as well.
Yeah. We want to thank Meryl Vandermeer for joining us this morning, a private chef, very successful, who now has carry-out business, take-out and carry-out and delivery business. Can you give us the website one more time?
Yes, it's DumondLuxuryServices.com. You can also put orders through with an email, orders@DumondGourmet.com, and then we have a contact number that you can call in to put your orders in as well.
Okay, great. We will be back after these messages. You're listening to Mountain Money.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Well, if you're not going out on New Year's Eve, welcome the new year with KPCW as we stay on the air until midnight, from 10 until midnight. It's dance music that you know by heart. You won't be able to admit to your friends, but have a fun and safe night.
Excellent. JW, thanks so much for joining us this morning. I want to thank our great sponsors, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate, and San Francisco Design. And that wraps it up. This is KPCW Park City.